campus ministry apprentice at Oasis Campus Ministry, and along with Jared, I lead worship here at Tempe Church, and I'm really glad to be with you today. It's my first sermon here. I'm a little nervous. My heart's pounding. That's okay, right? This is all family. Amen. So, we have been spending the year following Jesus, and we've reached the point of the year, since January now to August, where we are getting into the last things that Jesus is doing. And he's performing his greatest miracles, and soon we're going to get into this thing called the Upper Room Discourse, where he's telling his disciples, these are the things I need you to remember and I need you to do. And so today we're talking about arguably one of his biggest miracles in John 11, where he raises Lazarus from the dead. And when I saw this topic, I immediately put my name next to it because there was no hesitation within me, and I knew that this was something that I needed to talk about. It was the easiest decision I've made in quite a while. And there's something that is in this story that just sings into the very depths of my soul, and it provides a resonant model for what it looks like to really follow Jesus. And so, full disclosure, this story is massive. And I know that I've bitten off more than I can chew. But still, I think that there's something that we can uncover here today. And so before we go to the text, Diane, if you want to pull up the first part of the text, I'm going to give you a little background. So we have Mary, Martha, Lazarus, right? They're three siblings, and we know that they're good friends of Jesus. He really likes these guys. And we also have a lot of evidence to believe that Martha, who we're going to hang out with a lot today, that Martha is the matriarch, the head of her household. And even though maybe Lazarus traditionally would be seen as the head of his household, we can see that he very much acknowledges Martha as the head of her household. And we also have evidence to believe that their home in Bethany, and they're very wealthy, so they have a big home, was maybe like one of the first small little churches that was popping up. So this is a family that is very much entrenched in the ministry of Jesus. So now that we have that, let's go ahead and read part of the text. We're going to jump around a lot, so buckle up, guys. So we see that Lazarus has gotten sick, and Jesus is on his way to go visit him. And it says that when Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, less than 2 miles away. Many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them about their brother. And as soon as Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him, but Mary remained seated in the house. When Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. Yet even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. Your brother will rise again," Jesus told her. And Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me, even if he dies, will live. Everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she told him. "I believe you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who comes into the world." And we're going to skip down because we know that Jesus raises Lazarus, so we're going to skip down to there. So starting in verse 38, "Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. 'Remove the stone,' Jesus said. Martha, the dead man's sister, told Jesus, 'Lord, there is already a stench because he has been dead 4 days.' Jesus said to her, 'Didn't I tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?' So they removed the stone. Then Jesus raised his eyes and said, 'Father, I thank you that you heard me. I know that you always hear me, but because of the crowd standing here, I say this so that they may believe you sent me.' After this, he shouted with a loud voice, 'Lazarus, come out!' And the dead man came out, bound hand and foot with linen strips and with his face wrapped in cloth. And Jesus said to them, 'Unwrap him and let him go.'" So there you have it. One of the most significant miracles of Jesus wrapped up in a story full of theological significance and meaning. And it's not just for the Bible scholar. It's for the man and woman trying to follow Jesus. And the funny thing is that this isn't even about the miracle. It's about the life-changing idea of resurrection and a new way of thinking about life and death. So you guys are my church family, right? So many of you know that my dad has a terminal form of brain cancer. And I know that you know this because almost a year ago, I was leading worship here and I found out my dad was getting rushed into surgery to have this massive tumor removed. And you comforted me and you prayed for me and you sent me on my way to the airport to go be with my father. And I remember the days before that when I found out about his diagnosis. Remember, my degree's in neuroscience. I knew what glioblastoma meant. I remember getting the call and I walked into the Ed building and I collapsed against the wall because I love my dad so much and I can't imagine life without him. And so I collapsed against the wall because I couldn't stand anymore. And my friend Hannah came and she wrapped her arms around me and she silently held me as I wailed and as I sobbed. And so this story of John 11, of the raising of Lazarus, just perfectly parallels this journey that I'm on of figuring out what life and death really mean. And I know that it can parallel every time your heart has broken. The famous line in this story is when Jesus says, "I am the resurrection and the life." And this is really hard to, like, we don't even know what this means when we've had the death of a dream, or we're looking at our dead marriage, or a person that we never thought we could live without is dying. And just like it's hard for us to know what that means, it was really hard for the Jewish people in the time of Jesus to understand this, because death was the ultimate enemy in the Jewish culture. In modern Christianity, we don't really believe this, right? Because we believe Jesus has triumphed over death. So to us, Satan, for a lot of us, is our ultimate enemy. But this was not the case in the time of Jesus. Death was seen as the end of an abundant life with God. And they believed that dead people went down to Sheol, and it was a place that God never intervened and he never went to, and you were just a shell. You weren't a real full person anymore. And so the Jewish people had little to no concept of an abundant life after death. Death was the end for them, and their greatest concern was having a righteous and faithful life while they could here on earth. And some of you might be thinking, what about the Pharisees and the Sadducees? And so let's talk about that for a second. So the Pharisees believed in a physical resurrection. They believed that there was a prophesied Messiah that would come and overthrow the Roman Empire, because remember, they're being occupied by the Romans, and that this Messiah was somehow linked to the resurrection of the Jewish people. It was a very physical thing, that their physical bodies would be resurrected, right? And then we have the Sadducees, and the Sadducees, as my youth pastor told me when I was little, they're sad, you see, because they don't believe, thank you for that laugh, I appreciate that. They don't believe in a physical resurrection. I mean, maybe they thought that this was wishful thinking. I don't know, but they didn't believe in this. But this argument was so heated because this concept of resurrection was pretty new. And it was also very vague. There's only a couple of places in the Old Testament, namely Daniel and Isaiah, that really hint at a physical resurrection, and it's still super duper vague, and it's super duper open to interpretation. And then, like I said, it's very new. Like, people had only been thinking about this for a couple hundred years. And so when Jesus comes onto the scene and he says, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me, even if he dies, will live. Yeah, it's no wonder that at the end of this chapter, people are literally plotting to kill Jesus. So now that we have this context, let's get back to the text a little bit. And if you could go to the first part of the text. Jesus gets word that Lazarus is sick, right? And he takes his sweet time getting to Bethany, which really isn't far away. The text indicates that it's only about 2 miles. I mean, I'm a super slow runner, but I'm pretty sure I could do that in, like, you know, 25 minutes, you know? And we'll add in some rugged terrain that maybe Jesus was walking along. And so maybe it could have taken him half a day to get there. But he takes his sweet time. In fact, he tells his disciples that Lazarus is sleeping and that he's going to wake him up. And they're like, but if he's sleeping, that means that he'll get better, because sleeping when you're sick is a good thing. And Jesus is like, I'm just going to tell you straight. He's going to die. But don't worry. This will not end in death, and this will be for the glory of God. So sure enough, they finally roll into Bethany, and Lazarus is dead. And just a side note, this story is in no way, shape, or form about Lazarus. Our guy Lazarus, he's kind of just a plot device. And that's not to delegitimize the power of Jesus, but it's to highlight the power that he has and how it transcends Jesus' physical ability to just raise the dead. So this story, on first glance, is about the resurrection of Lazarus, but really, it's about the resurrection of Martha. And so Martha, she hears that Jesus is coming, and this lady is so proactive. Like, every story I read about her, I'm like, man, like, I resonate with this lady. And so she hears that Jesus is coming, and she goes to meet him. And the scriptures indicate that the first thing out of her mouth is, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. And Jesus tells her, your brother will rise again. And we know, being on this side of the resurrection, that Lazarus will physically rise, right? But Jesus is talking about something more powerful, more intangible. And Martha doesn't see this yet. And so she says, I know he'll rise again in the resurrection at the last day, because Martha clearly believes what the Pharisees believe, right? But Jesus responds to her, and not only does he reveal the truth about this super hazy concept of resurrection, he reveals the truth of who he is to her. And he beautifully and he brilliantly says, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me, even if he dies, will live. Everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? When Jesus asks Martha, do you believe this? He isn't asking her to confirm that he has this like crazy power to raise the dead. And besides, from Martha's not so subtle, yet even now I know that whatever you ask God, God will give you. It's like a pretty big hint, hint, nudge, nudge. She's seen his other miracles. Pretty sure she knows that Jesus can raise the dead. Yeah, so that's not what Jesus is doing. He's not asking her for some weird confirmation of his power. Jesus is inviting her to see the world in a new way. This is Martha's official invitation into the kingdom of God, where physical death is just another day. And she says yes. And not only does she say yes, she completely knocks it out of the ballpark and plainly states that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God who is coming into the world. And she gets it, and she sees the bigger picture. And Jesus said he did this that God may be glorified, and now God is glorified, because in the words of St. Irenaeus, he so poignantly puts it, the glory of God is a human being fully alive. The glory of God is a human being fully alive. And that is it. Martha has been resurrected, and now she can walk forth into new life. Now Jesus can raise Lazarus from physical death, and he knows and that Martha gets that this is just a fleshly demonstration of power, and nowhere near compares to the joy that comes from living in God's kingdom. And for me, this narrative is so pointed, and it strikes me deep in my heart, especially in this season of life, because those words, Lord, if you had been there, to me, those words are, Lord, if you had been here, my family would not be going through this gut-wrenching experience. Yet even now, I know that if you ask God, God will heal my father. And Jesus' words back to me are, your father will have life. And I echo Martha's words because I don't get it still. I don't get it. And so I say, I know that he'll have life after death. I mean, I'm Christian. Come on, Jesus, I'm talking to you. Like, I know that when he dies, he'll go to heaven and everything will be great. But Jesus smiles at me with that knowing smile that he uses so often. And he says, I am the resurrection and the life. Eternal and abundant life. With me, it starts now, and you don't need to wait until you die. Eternal. with me starts now. There's no need to wait until death. Do you believe this? And my response is a stunned, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the fullness of life. And being loved by you, Jesus, is so wonderful, and it's so joyous, and it's so magnificent that death is just an event. It's a benign character, and it's no longer an enemy to be feared, but a powerless caricature on the landscape of life. Because Jesus is the resurrection and life, every day I have with my precious dad is more teeming. It's more beautiful than ever before. And I could have run straight back into my grave, and I could have believed the lie that life was no longer going to be beautiful. And that would have been actual death. But Jesus invited me into resurrection and life. And when I accepted his invitation, he made me more fully alive than I have ever been before. And now life is more abundant than it was before. And our vision at this church is to pursue life with God together. It's a vision that accepts the invitation of Jesus to experience life in the kingdom right here and right now. It's an invitation to have life and not death. But this begs the question, if Jesus is life and he's triumphed over physical death, what is he resurrecting us from? Spiritual death, right? Not just physical death. And this is what Jesus daily resurrects us from. These are the things in life that bring death to our spirits. And it's here. It's from those things that Jesus' resurrection power shines the most brightly. And so I ask you, what is it that you need resurrection from? What are the parts of your life that are still dead? The parts that you want to stay in the grave, and so you can't walk forward into life. I mean, maybe it's your addiction. Maybe your addiction is killing your body and your soul, and you need resurrection. You need Jesus to come to you and say, come out of the grave, you're free. Maybe the loss of your job has made you feel absolutely worthless, and you need resurrection, and you need him to come and say to you, come out of the grave, you are worth dying for. Maybe it's your divorce. Maybe your divorce has made you feel completely unloved, and you need resurrection, and you need him to say, come out of the grave. You are lovely, and I love you always. And maybe the death of your child has sucked the life out of you, and you need Jesus to resurrect you, and you need him to come to your grave and say, come out of the grave. I am life, and I never run out. Everyone has death, and everyone needs resurrection. And our God, he's not just in the business of resurrection. He is resurrection. And why does God resurrect you? Let it be known forever that God resurrects you because he loves you and he wants to be with you. And you cannot experience the fullness of the life that he wants for you if parts of you are still dead. That's it. Jesus said, I come that they may have life and have it abundantly. And we can't have abundant life when we're still dead. And so Jesus looks into your grave and says, come out, stay with me. Come out and just be with me. I am life, follow me. And we do, we come out of our graves and we follow him. I see so many of you clinging so tightly to our precious Jesus. And watching your faith makes me cling even more tightly to him. Because that's what true and full life is. It's following Jesus, knowing that we are completely loved by him. And just because you've been called out of the grave doesn't mean that there won't be things in life that make you want to go running back. Amen. We know that the rain falls on the righteous and the wicked, and we know that things will happen to us that make that grave look so much safer, so much more predictable than following our friend Jesus. And this reminds me so much of the next part of the story. Diane, if you could go to the next slide, please. And I'm really glad that John included this little detail because it shows that Jesus is infinitely patient and he never gets frustrated with us. I'm going to say that one more time. He is infinitely patient and he never gets frustrated with us. He never looks at us and is like, oh, gotta go resurrect her again. Good Lord. You know, he never does that. And it's right here. After Jesus talks to Martha and he resurrects her, and then he resurrects Mary in her own way too, and now he's going to resurrect Lazarus. And so when Jesus goes to resurrect Lazarus, though, Martha stops him, and she says, Lord, there is already a stench, because he's been dead 4 days. And I hope, this sounds so ridiculous to me. She has had one of the most ridiculously amazing conversations with Jesus in recorded scripture, and she is scandalized at the thought that Jesus is going to smell some funky stuff. In fact, the King James Version, I just love this. It puts it, he stinketh. And that's okay. She's allowed to forget. You know, she is. Because there are times that we forget we're alive. And we let death creep in. I mean, we have relapses, right? And we take things and we take people for granted. And sometimes the world revolves around our children or the person that we're dating. And we get sucked back in to old patterns and behaviors. And we run from life back into the arms of death, right back into the grave. And I imagine in this story that Jesus is facing the tomb. And then he turns and faces Martha and says, didn't I tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? And what's the glory of God? It's human beings fully alive. And I imagine that he turns back to her and says, Lazarus, come out. And yes, sometimes we run back and we believe the lies, right? And like Martha, we'll say the equivalent of, but Lord, he stinketh. And Jesus will have to remind us that a little smell doesn't deter him because he knows that resurrection is messy and that it is a daily process. And we know that Jesus is love, and love is patient, and it's kind, and love never sees you as a failure. Never. Every time you run back to that grave, Jesus never sees you as a failure. He doesn't. He just comes over to the grave, and he says, come out. The resurrection of the life that is Jesus Christ himself does not exclude death and mourning and decay. But Jesus walks. He walks into these situations. And so I know that after you sent me on my way to go see my dad, when I walked into his hospital room after surgery, Jesus walked in there with me. And I know that every 2 months when I'm waiting anxiously for the call to see if my dad's cancer is back, I know that Jesus waits with me. And I know that the day that my dad's cancer does come back, I know that Jesus will weep uncontrollably with me. And he'll hold me. Because Jesus walks into the illnesses and the deaths of our loved ones. He walks into the losses of our jobs and our divorces and our addictions, and he breathes new life into them. He takes his paintbrush and he transforms the images of our lives, even the unimaginable ones. And he takes them, he makes them beautiful pictures filled with wonder and filled with colors that we didn't even know existed. Because life with only grief and death is not life at all. Yet still, life with only joy and happiness, that's also not life. Life with Jesus is the fullest possibility of life, and that life includes weeping and laughter and mourning and dancing, and more importantly than any of those things, it includes Jesus sitting with us in all of those situations, weeping, laughing, mourning, and dancing right alongside us. So in the situations that you're going to face in your life that seem to only bring death, he will weep and he will mourn with you. And he also knows the right time to say, come out, take off your grave clothes, and keep following me. Thank you.
Let's stand.